We've had a lot going on this week, and one of the things that you know that has been in the news that I find of feel compelled that I ought to say something about, but quite frankly, I'm not quite sure what to say something about, is this Supreme Court decision that we've had. Have you been watching this about same-sex unions? And I've been trying to figure out what the spiritual implications for the life of the church are, and I realize it's a touchy subject because I know that in this room we've got people who stand on both sides of the issue. I consider myself to be more of a moderate, and on this issue, this is a good example, because I hear people on one side saying this is an example of how we really need to love each other, and on the other hand, people saying, but we really need to take the Bible seriously. And I just can't get away from the feeling in my gut that there's got to be a way to do both, that there's got to be a third way where we both love each other and take what that means seriously and take the Bible seriously as the guide and authority in our life. And I'm still looking for a way to combine those two and go forward together. That doesn't get us to the scripture reading for today, which comes from the book of Genesis. It's the story about the creation of the world. It goes like this. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning the first day. Then I'm going to skip a little bit further down to the sixth day, when God said, "Let us make humankind in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, and over the wild animals of the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." And so God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves upon the earth." And God said, "See, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is upon the face of the earth and every tree which bears its fruit, and you shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he made, and indeed it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Here at Faith Community, we love kids. I love hearing the sound of kids as we worship. I love watching them dance in the side. One of the ways that we as a church celebrate kids is by doing every year a vacation Bible school. Do you know when this year's vacation Bible school starts? Today, exactly, tonight, and it goes on through Thursday. Jeannie Mills and Lynn Engel and a whole host of other saints have been working really hard in getting ready for tonight. We'll probably have about 100 or so kids that'll be part of Vacation Bible School in the course of the week. And I thought it might be a good idea to tie together our themes for the next two Sundays with the theme for Vacation Bible School. This way, if you're a kid, you kind of know what's coming through the course of the week, so you can help lead the other kids through it. If you're a parent or a grandparent, you're going to have some idea of what your kids are going to be dealing with this week. And so hopefully you can have some really interesting and helpful conversations through the week. And if you don't have any connection with Vacation Bible School at all, at least you'll know what's going on. We're going to start this week at the beginning, at the very beginning. Can you guess what we're going to be dealing with in Vacation Bible School this week? If you start reading the Bible at the very beginning, there's two stories of creation, right? There's the story about the 7 days of creation, and then there's the story about Adam and Eve in the garden. We're going to focus especially on the 7 days of creation. It teaches us some fundamental things about God, about the reason why everything that we can see is the way that it is and why we are here. Do you know how the story goes? I read a part of it just a minute ago. On the first day God created, what did God create? Heavens. It starts out with light, right? Starts out with light, and then the second day God creates sky. Third day God creates land and sea. Fourth day God creates. Really? Oh, it's a good thing we're dealing with it. Fourth day, God creates the sun and the moon. The fifth day, God creates living creatures. Sixth day, you got to have this one. God creates us, humankind. And the seventh day, what did God do? God rests. There are a couple of random thoughts I have as I'm reading through this that I didn't know how to fit into sermon points. And so I thought I'd just share with you a couple of random thoughts that I have as I read through the story of creation. First is, it was told to a people who believed in a lot of different gods. There were gods who ran just about everything or were represented by just about everything in the world. And can you appreciate how radical this story would have been in that kind of a setting? The story of Genesis steps in and said, no, that's not true. There's just one God. And this God is so in control of things that all God has to do is speak and things are created. Here's another random thought. There are parts of it that are very, very hard to translate. For example, in the first sentence, there is a word that no one quite knows what it means. It's made up of the first letter in the Hebrew alphabet and the last letter in the Hebrew alphabet and the middle word in the Hebrew alphabet. Doesn't appear anywhere else, and the people who study this kind of thing don't seem to really know what it means. It's been translated everything, or in the version I just read from the New Revised Standard Version, it's translated the heavens and the earth. God created whatever this word is. After each day of creation, there's the line, and there was evening and there was morning. Actually, in Hebrew, I'm told it goes the other way around. It reads, there was morning and there was evening. Notice the day begins and ends in the evening. If you go to a Jewish synagogue, they celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday. You know when the Sabbath begins in the Jewish tradition? Friday night, because that's the beginning of the Sabbath day. I think this is interesting. I don't know quite what to make of it, but light is created on the first day, and the sun and the moon are created on the fourth day. So apparently they saw some separation between light and the sun and the moon. When humans are created, this is an odd thing about this version, God refers to God's self in the plural a number of times. God says, let us create humankind in our image. What's up with that? One last thought. In my college biology class, my college professor started the biology class by referring to this story from Genesis. And he said that if it weren't for this story in Genesis, there would be no science. Because this story proposes the idea that creation happened in a sequence and an order and is not something by mistake. And that is the underlying assumption of all of science. There's a song that we're going to be singing this week that you've probably heard before. The theme is, he's got the whole world in his hands. So can you guess what the song that we're going to be singing this week is? Do you know how that goes? He's got the whole world in his hands. Thank you for not making me sing alone. World in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world. Then there are verses. He's got my brothers and my sisters in his hand. He's got my brothers and my sisters in his hands. He's got the brothers and my sisters in his hand. He's got the river and the mountains. He's got the river and the mountains in his hands. He's got the rivers and the mountains in his hands. He's got the rivers and the mountains. In his hands, he's got everybody here. He's got everybody here. In his hands, he's got everybody here. In his hands, he's got everybody here. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. The idea is that then, now that you've got this tune going through your head and you know that it's going to be going through your head all week long, that you make up your own verses to it. So is there something, for example, going on in the life of our country right now that we might include a verse about? A week and a half ago, we had the events in Charleston, South Carolina. That would be a good thing to trust into God's hands, right? He's got Charleston and Emmanuel in his hands. Is there something going on in the life of Xenia this week that we might want to trust into God's hands? There's the fireworks on Friday. He's got the fireworks on Friday in his hand. He's got Vacation Bible School in his hands. Are there things going on in your life that might be good to add a verse about? He's got my meeting on Tuesday in his hands. He's got my trip to Florida in his hands. Do you see how that works? All right, now, are you ready to go a step further, though? Let's be honest here. There are limits to this song, aren't there? Because if we are really honest, not everything is in God's hands, is it? God, for whatever reason, chooses to hold the world in his hands, kind of like a person might hold a bird in their hands or a parent might hold a child in their hands. You hold them tightly enough that it can't get away, but not so tightly that you hurt it. And the result is that sometimes things fall through God's hands, right? What are some examples of that, for example? Well, I think I mentioned one of them just a minute ago. You've heard the events in Charleston, yeah. Where I find it difficult to understand how a person would have so much hate or bigotry or arrogance that they feel the need to kill 9 other people. But that seems to be what happened. And what makes it even worse is that this was in a church. And the guy had sat through an hour of Bible study with these other people, and so it's not like these were complete strangers out on a street. It just breaks your heart just hearing that story, doesn't it? I am sure that God had nothing at all to do with what went on there. And because of that, good people died. I'm sure that God wept. A little closer to home, we had another example, I think, that breaks our hearts. Have you seen the funeral for Sonny Lane, a police officer that was shot down in Cincinnati? Happened on Friday. It happened apparently just down the street from where a friend of mine pastors. His name is Colonel Graham, where a gentleman who had been convicted of robbery and then was accused of a sexual assault apparently felt like he'd run out of choices and was looking for somebody to take his anger out on, and so shot this officer, Sonny Lane. He made a bad choice and now has lost the freedom to make most decisions for himself. I am sure there again, God weeps. Can you see how it would be easy in a world like that to think that the world is a destructive, violent place that's out of control? Genesis is thought to have been written during the period of Israel's exile, when they were exiled in Babylon. I'm sure it had been around for a long time, but it's thought to have been written down during the Babylonian exile. There was another creation story that was popular in Babylon at that time that was called the Enuma Elish. And here's the way this version of creation went. There were 2 great gods. Their names were Tiamat and Apsu. They were the gods of fresh water and salt water. And they mingled from time to time. And when they mingled, they created other younger, newer gods. One of the younger, newer gods was a god by the name of Marduk. Marduk was making a ruckus one night. Can you imagine that? Children being so loud that the parents couldn't sleep. Apsu got really upset with Marduk for not letting him get a good night's sleep and decided he was going to kill his kids. So Apsu went out and tried to kill Marduk, but Marduk was younger and stronger and faster and probably smarter, and so Marduk killed Apsu. Now the mom isn't very happy, and so Tiamat decides to get even with her kid for killing her husband, and so she goes after Marduk, and Marduk kills his mom, Tiamat. And out of her dead, decaying body comes creation. Can you see how, if that's the way you believe the world came into being, you'd assume it was a pretty violent, horrible, nasty place? The book of Genesis says no. That's not the way it is at all. It's more like this. In the beginning, God created. There's a rhythm and an order. There's a purpose to all of creation. God holds the world in his hands. And while not everything is controlled by God, you can see God's hand at work in creation. Because anytime you hold something, you know what you leave on it? Fingerprints, right? Fingerprints. Where do you see the fingerprints of God in creation? Another person who's been in the news this week is a guy named Pete Rose. You know Pete Rose? Maybe one of the greatest baseball players that's ever lived. Had more hits than any other person has ever had. Played in more games than any other person had back in the 1980s, but is still not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Do you know why? He's accused of betting on his team, or against his team, I guess. I got curious, how do they know that? Do you know what I think the proof is? They've got some betting slips. And do you know what these betting slips have on them? His fingerprints. His fingerprints, that's apparently proof. Where do you see God's fingerprints in creation as you look at creation around you? The Gospel of John takes it even a step further. God says that you can see not just the goodness of God, but the very grace of Jesus Christ in creation. The Gospel of John says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen His glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." So the question then is, when you look at the faces of people around you, do you see Jesus? I love the story of Sherlock Holmes and his sidekick Watson, who went out camping one night. They set up their tent, they went into their tent and fell asleep. And early in the morning, Sherlock Holmes wakes up Watson and looks up at the sky and sees the sky and the stars and says to his sidekick Watson, says, "I look at the stars and I wonder, what do you see? What do you see, Watson, when you look at the stars?" Now, Watson, you know, is always trying to impress Sherlock Holmes, and so he looks at the stars and he says, "Well, here's what I see. Astronomically, I see that there are millions of stars, therefore millions of galaxies, and potentially millions of planets. Astrologically," he says, "I observe that Saturn is in Leo. Horologically, I deduce that the time is approximately a quarter past three. Theologically, I can see that God is omnipotent and we are small and insignificant. Meteorologically, I see that we're probably going to have a beautiful day tomorrow." And then Watson turns to Sherlock Holmes and says, "And what do you see?" And Sherlock Holmes looks up at the star in the sky and says, "I see that somebody has stolen our tent." I don't believe everybody who looks at creation sees the same thing. I think you have to know God in order to see God. And so I think this is a crucial question. When you look at creation around us, where do you see the fingerprint of God? Here's something else I see in this story of creation that I don't think should be overlooked. At the end of each day, God looks at what He's done. And do you know what He says? "It's good. It's good." And at the end of the sixth day, God looks at what He's done in creating humankind as the ultimate and final act of creation and looks at us. And what does God say? "It's very good. It's very good. You were created by a good God," and God loves what He sees. Why is that important to know? Well, you're going to run into somebody this week who sees themselves as broken or ugly or forgotten or a mistake. You're going to have the opportunity not to create in them something that's not there, but to help remember, for them to remember, how it is that they were created. Are you wondering, how do I do that? There's a good example of that, I think, in the Gospel according to John, the fourth chapter. There Jesus goes to a well, Jacob's well, and runs into a woman. It's about noontime. That's a pretty stupid time, quite frankly, to go and get water at a well, because that part of the world, it would have been hot during the day. It would have been much smarter to go and get water in the morning or in the evening. Probably she was there because she didn't want to talk to anybody. Jesus talks to her anyway. He lets her know that He cares enough about her to talk to her. He tells her about the Messiah, and then He offers to her not just a drink of water, but a drink of living water. As if to say she is so valuable to Him that He wants her to see that she was created as a good person in God's image. Words make a difference. You will have the opportunity this week to share with somebody that they are created to be good. How are you going to use that power? Henry Nouwen once wrote, "Words, words, words. Our society is full of words. They're on billboards and television screens and newspapers and books. They're whispered and shouted and sung. Words move and they dance and they change in size and color. They say, taste me and smell me, eat me, drink me, sleep with me. But most of all, they say, buy me. With so many words around us, we quickly say, well, they're just words. Thus, they have lost much of their power. Still, the word has power to create. When God speaks, God creates. When God says, let there be light, light is. God speaks light. For God speaking and creating are the same. It's the creative power that we need to reclaim. What we say is very important. When we say, I love you, and say it from the heart, we can give another person new life, new hope, and new courage. When I say, I hate you, we can destroy another person. And so Henry Nouwen says, let us watch our words. So how will you bring out the best in somebody else this week? One last thought. God didn't just say that we were created to be good. God went so far as to say we were created to bear the very image of God. God said, let us make humankind in our image. Sometimes we get to thinking that being faithful means that we grasp God. But if we're held in God's hands, what does it mean that the better attitude of faith is? The better attitude of faith is to be carried by God. Not led by God's hand, not kept at hand by God, but he's got the whole world in his hands. A couple of months ago, I wrote an article for the Faith Community News, Faith Links, that reminded us of a passage that you can find in Deuteronomy. The beloved, Moses is speaking here to the tribe of Benjamin. The beloved is the one who dwells between the shoulders of God. I love that. Or in other words, God carries us piggyback on his shoulders. Don't you like that image of being carried piggyback by God? Here's a story that I'll leave you with. It's a story about a young man who woke up in the middle of the night and found that he was in his house and it was on fire. His father had managed to escape the house and so was outside. The only way he could find to get to safety was to go up on the roof. And so he went up on the roof of the house. He's surrounded by flames and he's surrounded by smoke and didn't quite know what to do. When he hears through the smoke his father's voice saying, jump, I'll catch you. But he couldn't see his father. All he could see was the smoke and flames. He heard his dad's voice saying, jump, I'll catch you. His dad knew that if he would only jump, he'd be okay. So his son yells out, he says, but dad, I can't see you. The dad yells back and says, but it'll be okay because I can see you. The challenge of faith is, even when we can't see God, to know that God sees us. So if you feel like you're caught in a house that's burning, do you feel like you're trying to save yourself and it's just not working? Are you deciding whether or not to say yes to God? Maybe this is the opportunity to jump into the arms of God and to say yes to God. Is there a decision that you're facing and the way is not clear? Is there a situation that every time you look at it, all you see is how wrong it could go? Maybe now is the time to be listening for the voice of God who sees all things and says that they are good. Maybe now is the time to trust that situation into God's arms. Is there a person who you know who is struggling? Do they see themselves as bad or ugly or only able to make mistakes? Maybe now is the time to speak a creative word for God and let them know that it's okay to jump into God's arms. This week, I focused more on seeing God in creation. Next week, I'd like to continue this theme and work on how creation isn't done yet and look at ways that we can be partners in creating with God by letting others know that, do you remember how this song goes? He's got the whole world in his hands, he's got the whole world. In his hands, he's got the whole world. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands.